Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Katie Weaver, Brian Lynn, Christopher Jones-Cruz, and Anne Ball. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Anna Mateo will have this week's health report. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
Yoshinori Osumi of Japan has won the 2016 Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine. The Nobel Assembly at Sweden's Karolinska Institute announced the prize on Monday. The Institute is honoring Osumi for his experiments with baker's yeast in the 1990s. He studied a natural process in which cells break down and reuse some of their parts. This process is called autophagy. The word autophagy comes from two words in the Greek language. They are auto, meaning self, and phagein, meaning to eat. The prize committee said, "Understanding the science behind this process has led to a better understanding of diseases such as cancer, Parkinson's, and type 2 diabetes." The Karolinska Institute said, "His discoveries opened the path to understanding the fundamental importance of autophagy in many physiological processes." Autophagy has been known for over 50 years, but its fundamental importance in physiology and medicine was only recognized after Yoshinori Osumi's paradigm-shifting research, it said. Thanks to Osumi and others following in his footsteps, we now know that autophagy controls important physiological functions to break down and recycle cellular particles. Osumi is now a professor at the Tokyo Institute of Technology. He told the Kyoto News Agency, "He was extremely honored to get the prize." Separately, he told Japanese broadcaster NHK he had always wanted to do something that other people wouldn't do. He said the breakdown of particles interested him. Krister Ug is a professor with Sweden's Karolinska Institute. He said the experiments helped explain important processes in human development, from growing up to aging to dying from a disease. In the very early stages, your organs and your whole body is constantly being made over again. You are growing. So you need to get rid of the old stuff and generate new structures, he told Reuters News Service. When you undergo aging, you have structures that have to be taken away, and this autophagy is the principle that gets rid of them. If you affect this system, the genes and proteins involved in autophagy, you no longer can take care of the waste, and once it accumulates, you will get some type of disease, he said. The Prize for Physiology or Medicine is the first Nobel Prize awarded each year. It is worth $930,000. Other Nobel Prizes will be announced this week and next week. I'm Katie Weaver.
The U.S. government has officially transferred control of the Internet address system to an international governing body. The change took place on October 1st. What will this mean for Internet businesses and users all over the world? To answer that question, it is necessary to consider the history of how the public Internet developed. The public Internet was still in early development in 1998. That year, the U.S. Department of Commerce took over the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. This not-for-profit organization is located in Los Angeles, California. The U.S. government gave ICANN the authority to oversee domain names for websites and individual IP addresses for Internet users. This responsibility included assigning the operators of high-level domains such as .com and .uk. The contract between the Department of Commerce and ICANN ended on Saturday. This had been planned for a long time. Now a global Internet community, including governments, businesses, technical experts, and members of civil society, oversees ICANN. Supporters of the change, including the administration of President Barack Obama, said it made sense to transfer control of ICANN to an international community. They noted that this community is made up of technical experts who helped build the Internet. These experts are still responsible for many of its operations. Opponents argued the transition was a mistake because it could lead to authoritarian governments getting greater control over the Internet. They tried to block the ICANN transfer. The move was opposed by Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. Cruz, a Republican Party member, explained his concerns during a hearing last month of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee.
Imagine an Internet run like many Middle Eastern countries that punish what they deem to be blasphemy. Or imagine an Internet run like China or Russia that punish and incarcerate those who engage in political dissent.
Cruz said not having the government in control of ICANN means the organization is not bound to uphold the U.S. Constitution's First Amendment. The First Amendment covers basic rights, including freedom of speech and religion. Milton Mueller is a professor at Georgia Institute of Technology's School of public policy. He disagrees with those who fear new censorship on the Internet. Mueller, who also heads the private Internet Governance Project, says ICANN rules bar the organization from using its powers to control Internet content. Lawrence Strickling is the administrator of the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, which was overseeing ICANN. He told the Senate hearing the U.S. government never had the power to censor online content. Mueller said not having ICANN under the control of the U.S. government makes the organization more accountable to all people. This is because member governments must all agree to any policy changes. Yoron Marby is the president and chief executive officer of ICANN. He said the group is a non-political technical entity that has nothing to do with protecting free speech on the Internet. I'm Brian Lynn.
Republicans in the United States have not won a presidential election since 2004, but they are much stronger on the state government level than the Democratic Party. The Republican Party has sharply increased its control of state legislatures and governorships during the presidency of Barack Obama. Obama, a Democrat, will leave office in January 2017, after serving 8 years as president. Democrats control 919 fewer seats in state legislatures than they did in 2009, when Obama first took office. That information comes from the Pew Research Center and the National Conference of State Legislatures. Republicans control 67 of 98 state House and Senate chambers. That is more than at any time in the history of the Republican Party. Democrats control 31. 55% of the country's more than 1,900 state senators are Republican. 56% of the more than 5,350 state representatives are Republican. There are about 4,040 Republican state legislators and about 3,100 Democratic legislators nationwide. That is the largest number of Republican state lawmakers since 1920. The Republican Party has controlled a majority of the state legislatures since the 2010 elections, when the Democrats lost control of 24 legislatures. This year, the U.S. elections take place on November 8th. Voters will fill a total of 5,917 legislative seats in 44 states. That is more than 80% of all state legislative seats nationwide. Currently, Republicans control both legislative chambers in 30 states, the highest number since 1978. Democrats control 12, the lowest number since 1978. Republicans control the State House, State Senate, and governor's office in 23 states. Democrats have that level of control in just 7 states. There are 31 Republican governors, 18 Democrats, and 1 independent. The mayor of Washington, D.C. is a Democrat. Political experts say the increase in Republican control of state governments has happened for many reasons. One reason is that the Republicans have outspent and outworked Democrats at the local and state levels. Another is that white voters have been leaving the Democratic Party, especially in the Deep South. That is an area that includes Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, and South Carolina. It also includes parts of 5 other states: Florida, Virginia, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Texas. In 1964, Democrats held or controlled almost all of the political offices in the Deep South. That is the year President Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act into law. The measure gave legal protection to minorities. Some observers believe the Civil Rights Act is the main reason many whites have left the Democratic Party. Tim Story is an expert on the U.S. elections at the National Conference of State Legislatures. He notes that Republicans have been slowly gaining control of the South for the past 25 years. By 2008, Republicans had gained 46% of all seats in Southern legislatures, and today they hold 63% of the seats and every governorship, he added. Republicans control both of the legislative chambers of every Southern state, except for Kentucky, which has a small Democratic majority. Every U.S. senator in the Deep South is a Republican, and a large majority of House members from the Deep South are Republicans. There are no white Democrats serving in the U.S. House of Representatives from the South. In a report, the Democratic National Committee noted the increase in the Republican Party's control of state governments. It said the party worked for more than 30 years, organizing, fostering talent, and making significant financial investments at the state and local level. Washington Post reporter Chris Siliza called the report largely useless because it did not have specific plans to take back control of state legislatures and governorships from Republicans. The reality, and this is one of the least appreciated stories in politics these days, is that Democrats have been badly beaten by Republicans at the state and legislative level over the past decade, he wrote. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Arctic sea ice is melting faster than expected, and that means big changes in Earth's climate system. That warning comes from the World Meteorological Organization. Its scientists are calling for the establishment of an Arctic observatory to help deal with possible dangerous changes resulting
from the melting ice. The WMO believes changes in the Arctic area are likely evidence of a coming disaster. It noted that temperatures around the world continue to rise. 2016 is predicted to be the hottest year since modern record-keeping began 150 years ago. The Arctic is warming at least two times as fast as the world average, the WMO said. Arctic sea ice now covers 40% less area at the height of the summer melt season than it did in the late 1970s and early 1980s. The highest Arctic sea levels in March were said to be the lowest on record. Petteri Talas is the WMO's Secretary General. He told VOA that the changes in the climate were having a serious effect on the environment. For example, he said, the tree line in mountain areas is moving upward. There are also some species of animals who have difficulties in coping with these changes, Talas said. These include polar bears, Arctic seals, and even some birds. He said, the changing climate will also have an effect on fisheries. Talas also warned that the melting of the Arctic's frozen permafrost could release large amounts of greenhouse gases. Those gases are the ones that speed up the rise of temperatures. But the melting of the Arctic sea ice is also opening up new transportation, travel, and exploration possibilities. Talas said that less ice could cut the time it takes for ships to sail between Europe and East Asia. Opening the Arctic would also increase the risk of accidents in hazardous waters and oil spills. The cold, undeveloped environment is more difficult to clean up than other areas. Talas called for the establishment of an Arctic observatory to study, predict, and react to climate change. He said, this would keep transportation in Arctic waters safe. I'm Ann Ball.
This is What's Trending Today. Over 10 years ago, scientists from the United States went on a trip to Panama. The scientists were from Atlanta, in the state of Georgia, and Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, Illinois. They were worried that a disease might infect and destroy trees and plants in Panama. The plant life served as home to many frogs and other small amphibians like toads and salamanders. The scientists wanted to collect a few live amphibians from the area in case the remaining ones died. One of the animals they collected was later named the Rab's fringe-limbed tree frog. One scientist from Georgia said the frog was completely unknown to experts before the trip. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution says the tree disease eventually did spread to Panama, and many of the frogs disappeared. The Rab's frog lived in a special enclosed area at the Atlanta Botanical Garden. He was named Tuffy. He lived there for the last 8 years but he died late last month. Tuffy was over 11 years old. He was the last living member of the species in captivity. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. We begin with bad news for people who bought a wearable fitness tracker in hopes of losing weight. A new study finds the electronic device probably does not help with weight loss. The study was a project of researchers from the University of Pittsburgh in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania. Fitness trackers are designed to record your physical activity. They are usually worn around the wrist, where they measure a person's heart rate. The University of Pittsburgh research team looked at two groups of individuals. The first wore a fitness tracker and took part in health counseling. In other words, they spoke with nutrition and physical fitness experts to consider the best weight loss plan. The researchers compared this group with people who only took part in health counseling. The study found that those who simply had health counseling lost more weight than those who had counseling and wore a fitness tracker. In fact, those who only spoke with the health experts lost nearly 6 kilograms. Those who used a fitness tracker lost only 3.5 kilograms. John Chakisik is the lead researcher. He is also chairman of the university's Department of Health and Physical Activity. He questioned the use of electronic devices as tools for weight control in place of effective behavioral counseling for physical activity and diet. The study involved 470 subjects between the ages of 18 and 35. Some of them were overweight, while others were heavier and considered obese. Over 3/4 of the subjects were women, and 29% were minorities. The researchers told all the subjects to increase their physical activity. The men and women also were told to start on a low-calorie diet. The subjects were told to have their weight measured once every 6 months over the 2-year study. After 6 months, researchers divided the group into 2 parts. One continued with monthly counseling, while members of the other group were given a wearable fitness tracker. 18 months later, both groups showed significant improvements in body composition, fitness, physical activity, and diet, with no major difference between groups. However, when it came to losing weight, the people who spoke with experts lost nearly twice as much weight. Chakisik said the study's findings are important because effective, long-term treatments are needed to address America's obesity epidemic. He warned that questions remain regarding the effectiveness of wearable devices. More information is needed, he adds, to learn how to best use these devices to change physical activity and diet behaviors in adults who want to lose weight. The researchers published their findings in the Journal of the American Medical Association. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.